This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you and good morning to world. It's our weekly get-together here on WGN Radio, Saturday morning show. A lot to talk about, a lot going on, county fairs and state fairs and farmers markets and everything else that we invite you to take advantage of during this time of the year. And I'll send out a good morning to a lot of people that joined us at the Boone County Fair in Belvedere. President Lyle, who squired us around, and to Bob Shearer, who handled the entertainment tent, and to our musical group. It was just a good time at the Boone County Fair. It continues through tomorrow with a lot of activity going on. But there are county fairs all over the country at this time of the year, so pick one that's close to you. And state fairs, Wisconsin State Fair winding down this weekend, but the Illinois State Fair just getting underway. We'll be down there on Tuesday for Salute to Agriculture Day and MC the morning brunch, and then we'll MC the sale of the grand champions and join our friends at the CME group down there at the Illinois State Fair. Hope to see a lot of you down there. But we have business to take care of this morning, and we're going to do that because Jim Fazell is back with us again this morning, and so we'll be checking in with him for his advice on, well, kind of an interesting subject, growing plants to attract pollinators, something we all need if we're going to have a food supply. So Jim Fazell will be joining us when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We say good morning to Jim Fazell here on the Saturday Morning Show. And my first question, Jim, I take a look at your email telling me about rainfall last week. I didn't get much of anything, but you certainly did.
We got what you call your good old frog strangler.
It sounds that way. Over 2 inches?
Yeah, in less than an hour. We had a dandy. Unfortunately, a lot of it ran off, but some did soak in, especially where there were cracks in the ground. The cracks filled up, so it held that water. But we really needed it, and we could stand some more. We don't need 2.5 inches at one time, but we could stand another inch by the end of each week, and if we would get that, it would be great. But in the meantime, we make do with what we have, and the grass is beginning to green up a little bit, though if our weather continues dry, as Greg Solier seems to think, we may have another spell where the grass goes dormant. And for you, those of you whose grass are letting your grass grow dormant, keep in mind, you need to water it about once a week with about 1/4 of an inch of water. That's all it takes to keep the crowns hydrated so they don't dry. Not going to turn the grass green, but it's going to keep the grass alive so that when we begin getting sufficient water, it will go ahead and grow for you. In the meantime, you know, we have a lot of things going on in the garden that we rarely even talk about. One of the things that I've really gotten involved in and enjoy a lot, besides the vegetable garden, are the pollinator plants and attracting pollinator insects. Every garden needs pollinators. They're essential for some things like some of the fruits and vegetables. In our gardens, they do pollinate the vine crops. You know, we've talked about that in the past, where if you have cucumbers or squash, you've got to have bees to pollinate, to move the pollen from the male to the female flower, or you don't get anything. Of course, they pollinate the tree fruits, apples and so forth, and the small fruits like strawberries and raspberries. Incidentally, you know, they talk about how essential bees are. They are absolutely essential, as are the pollinators. But there are a lot of things that are self-pollinated or pollinated by the wind. This would be the root crops, things like carrots and beets, the salad crops, lettuce, although we don't really pollinate them because we don't eat the seeds. And tomatoes and peppers, you know, they're pollinated by the flower being shaken by the wind. And also the feed crops. You know, corn, of course, you know this, corn is pollinated by the wind dropping the pollen from the tassels down to the silks. The soybeans are generally self-pollinated, wheat and rice. So we don't need to worry about that out there, but we certainly need to worry about it for some of our more, what would you call them, exotic crops. So pollinators are fun to watch. Not only do they do a lot of good, but it's fun to have them in your garden. The butterflies and moths are gorgeous. There are various kinds of bees and wasps, and I like to watch them working. They're very industrious. And, of course, we do on occasion get hummingbirds, though they don't do much pollinating for the things we have around here. They're fun to watch as well. And, of course, some of these critters produce harvestable honey, the honeybees. If you're interested in raising bees for honey, that's what you want. And you want a lot of pollinator plants for that, especially ones that have a lot of nectar in them. Now, how do you attract these things? You plant plants out there that they can use for feed. The pollinators, as I said, like nectar. If you have plants with a lot of nectar in them, they will arrive. And things that do attract them are things like purple coneflowers, black-eyed Susan, some of the composites. Goldenrod, of course. It's later in the season, and some of the composites, by the time the goldenrod blooms, are done, so it's nice to continue the season that way. Things that have trumpet shapes, like Nicotiana, foxglove, or nasturtium. Bee balm is a very interesting plant. There's some that attract the bees like crazy, and some of the hybrids don't attract anything. So you try them all, but get rid of the ones that don't attract anything, unless you're just interested in the looks of them, in the flowers themselves. 4 o'clocks, sage, monarda is the bee balm. And some of the species in wild roses that we do grow as ornamentals, most of them only flower in the spring, but there are a few of them that flower later in the year, and that's good as well. Fruit trees and linden trees attract tremendous numbers of bees, and if you can get them coming to your yard with those kinds of trees, they'll hang around when other things begin to bloom. And, of course, milkweed. It flowers late, and not only that, it's one of the plants that's necessary for feeding by the larva. The larva of butterflies and moths. Monarchs feed on the milkweed, swallowtails on fennel and dill. And, you know, strangely enough, we have a lot of red admiral butterflies around, and they feed on nettles. I don't know many nettles, and we certainly don't grow them in our garden. One of the other things that we find a lot of are the Cecropia moths. These are great, big, beautiful moths. They're brown in color with an eye on each wing. If you have lilac trees, that's what those feed on, and that's fun as well. In fact, if you are interested in raising Cecropias or monarchs, either one of them, I have some information on building cages so that you can get them, collect them as eggs. You feed them out until the larva hatch into butterflies or moths, and then you release them so that they can go do their thing. If you're going to grow these plants, you need to grow them in well-drained soil. They need to be in area where they can be irrigated if necessary when you're getting them started. And you want to plant clumps of the same kind because it's easier for the pollinators to find them. You do not want to use fertilizer on native plants because it just makes them tall and spindly and weak. And you want to try to avoid spraying because you don't want to interfere with any of the insects that are coming in. Also, to attract bees, if you're going to have some of the native bees, you can provide nesting boxes, which just blocks of wood with a bunch of holes bored into them. They're online. You can get all kinds of instructions for those. And interestingly enough, it's occasionally a pretty good idea to provide some drinking water, especially if you have weather like what we've just gone through. And one other thing that we don't often do, when these plants, especially the composites, have finished flowering, leave them. Because many have fruit seeds and little tiny seeds that will attract birds. Goldfinches, we're beginning to see them on our coneflowers now. The purple coneflower is attracting them. And in the evening, we have flocks of goldfinches that come in. Cardinals come in, robins, chickadees, juncos. So it's a nice thing. It's a fun thing to do, and we're thoroughly enjoying watching these things going on in our garden right now. The flowers are beautiful, the creatures that visit them are wonderful, and they're creatures of nature that brighten our lives. We do enjoy sitting in our garden, especially in the morning with the first cup of coffee. It's when the monarchs seem to come out. And in the evening, those are all blessings we take for granted. And it's not going to be too long before this year is over, so enjoy it while you can. We certainly do, and we know that the time is short, and we take advantage of every moment out there.
Good idea. And, of course, farm markets are again in full swing, and county fairs and state fairs and all of the other activities that make summertime so great in rural communities, but also in suburban communities. We always appreciate your expertise, and pollinators, fascinating. So hopefully we can do more to make their life a little bit easier as well. Jim Fazell, he's our specialist in ornamental horticulture, with us on the Saturday Morning Show. Indeed we do, Max. Thank you for that. And we're going to continue the discussion of the Farm Progress Show in just a moment or two, because Matt Youngman has been putting that show together with a lot of help from people at the Farm Progress companies, and he's been doing it for years. And so Steve Alexander caught up with him and not too long ago to talk about what's going to happen at Boone, Iowa. Remember, the show is at Boone, Iowa every other year, and in the years it's not there, it's at Decatur, Illinois, two permanent sites for the Farm Progress Show. And, well, we're just a little over 3 weeks away from the show in Boone, Iowa, and that means producers really from all over the world will gather to celebrate agriculture and see the latest that technology has to offer. And Steve Alexander talked with a man in charge of the Farm Progress Show.
Joining me is Matt Youngman, National Events Director for Farm Progress Companies. And Matt, you've got a big show coming up.
Yeah, we're excited. August 28th, 29th, and 30th in Boone, Iowa, the Farm Progress Show. We'll have the latest and greatest in row crop and cow-calf agriculture.
Yeah, that's interesting. Latest and greatest, and that's something that you can say pretty much every year as you host this, whether it's in Boone or back in Decatur. The changes in technology just keep on coming, don't they?
Yeah, it's, you know, it really isn't the things that we do to make the show better. You know, as the promoter, as the owner and promoter of the show, it's the hard work that the exhibitors do, and their innovations that they come out with that the farmers flock to see. Their new products or technologies or services that they're offering are what the visitors really get excited to see.
How many years have you been involved in this Farm Progress Show?
I've been doing something with this show since 1995, so I've kind of lost count, but I've been in this position since 2004 of managing Farm Progress Show, Husker Harvest Days, and our New York Farm Show.
Yeah, and not to put you on the spot, but what would you say is a biggest change or a biggest group of changes that you've seen over the years?
I think the thing that is most interesting is to watch the technology go from being cutting edge to being used every day. When I started doing this back in the mid-90s, you know, traded crops and GPS technology were cutting edge things that seemed a little bit crazy. And now those two things are commonplace. And now, you know, the cutting edge things are even deeper technologically, better, different traits, you know, and it's just interesting to watch these things go from being the top secret cutting edge thing to being the normal operation of a farm.
How many exhibitors are you expecting this year?
Just short of 600. We're just short of a sellout right now. A few spots still open, but that's not unexpected with the ag economy where it is today.
And spread over how big of an area?
The exhibit field itself is 2.6 million square feet of exhibit space. When you add in the streets and food service and restrooms and things, it ends up being about 80 acres of exhibit field, 150 acres of parking, and then another 350 acres of field demonstrations.
Oh, that's a lot of walking for some people. Are there ways to get around besides walking?
There are. You know, if you have a golf cart, you can bring your own golf cart or rent one, and then we obviously have shuttles running all over the place from the parking lot into the show, and then from the show side out to the field demonstrations.
Take us through what people can expect to see or experience if they want to experience all of it that the Farm Progress Show has to offer.
Well, you're going to walk about six and a half miles of streets if you want to see everything. And, you know, it's probably best described as the Detroit Auto Show for farming. And what that means is it's the place where You know, much like the car companies will hold back and do their big product unveilings at the Detroit or Chicago Auto Show, you know, the big companies like John Deere and Case IH, Monsanto, Dow DuPont, they will hold back and do their product their global product unveilings at the Farm Progress Show. And so you're going to see everybody's newest, latest, hottest things on display at the show.
So news is going to be made, potentially.
Yeah, it's the largest gathering, you know, in addition to being the largest show, it's the largest gathering of ag media anywhere in the country. And so, yeah, when Case IH came out with an autonomous tractor, it was unveiled a couple of years ago, 8 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday of the Farm Progress Show.
Now, besides the exhibitor exhibits, you also have some demonstrations?
We do. You know, in addition to having nice, shiny, pretty combines and tractors and tillage tools, we also have a duplicate version out in the field that the companies will compete side by side. So, you know, every morning at 11 o'clock, we'll line up everybody's combines and run them side by side. It's a great shopping opportunity if you're a farmer to watch. You know, if you're in the market for a tillage tool, you can watch all of the competitors from a certain category run side by side and take a look at how that might work on your farm actually live in action without having to have 8 different tools brought out to your farm to test them.
Well, that's pressure, huh? On the makers of the equipment.
they burn up a lot of acres ahead of time to make sure that they are set just perfectly so they look just right come showtime.
Yeah, and are there demonstration crops that are being cut or harvested?
There are about 350 acres of corn. We'll pull about half of that off ahead of the show to get everything tuned up, and then we'll use the other half on the actual 3 days of the show. And then, you know, in addition to the crop demonstrations, which is harvesting and tillage and those types of things, we also have live cattle handling demonstrations showing the latest in safely handling livestock with different head chutes and those kind of things on display.
What is the most popular part of the Farm Progress Show?
You know, it kind of varies. It's a little bit like why you would go to anything else. There's a lot of reasons that pull you, but you know, you see at the combine demonstration, you know, that's probably the single largest attended individual event that we do. And so, you know, you're talking about a quarter mile of people, 6, 7, 8, 10 deep, lined up to watch those combines go by. That's it's visually impressive to see those big machines run by, harvesting, you know, 40 feet wide at 6, 7 miles per hour. It's pretty impressive the work that those machines do.
Boy, I'll say, yeah. Well, let's go through the basics again, the dates again.
August 28th, 29th, and 30th, which is the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday ahead of Labor Day.
And
it's open 8 to 5 on Tuesday and Wednesday and 8 to 4 on Thursday.
And tickets?
Tickets are $20 at the gate. You can buy them in advance at farmprogressshow.com for $15, so a $5 discount there. And there's a link for hotel rooms and about everything else you'd want to know right there at farmprogressshow.com.
And getting to Boone, Iowa?
Very simple. If you find your way to Iowa on I-80 or I-35, you're north of the intersection of I-80 and I-35, about 20 miles, and then west on Highway 30. It's from pretty well anywhere in the country. It's 4-lane road all the way right up to the parking lot.
Matt Youngman, National Events Director for Farm Progress Companies. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Steve.
Our thanks to Steve and Matt for filling us in on a lot of details of the Farm Progress Show. As Max mentioned earlier, we'll be on stage on Tuesday, and then Max will be on stage Wednesday and Thursday. But we'll be flying Air Orion to Boone, Iowa next Tuesday, and look forward to seeing a lot of, or I shouldn't say next Tuesday, but the Tuesday of the show, and we look forward to seeing a lot of you out there. And before we check news headlines, let me check my reports from our downstate reporter in agriculture who emailed me twice this week. Trent, first of all, said good evening. This was Thursday. Second crop green beans are poking through the ground. Saw the first truckload of pumpkins heading to Nestle today. Harvest is here, and quite a bit of silage chopping going on just south and east of Effingham. And then he added another email saying, guys are buying a lot of feeder cattle in the 500 to 700 pound weight range the last couple of weeks. They are convinced the market is getting ready to rocket. Well, we're going to talk cattle and hog markets with Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services on the second half of the Saturday morning show. Well, thank you very much, Roger, and thank you for that great forecast yesterday. Absolutely perfect day for going to a fair, and we did. The Boone County Fair in Belvedere, Illinois, that continues through Sunday night. Saw a lot of old friends because we used to go to that show often and host a program with Leroy Van Dyke, the country music star who wrote the Auctioneer's song. So it was good, and particularly good to see Al Henninger because I worked with Al for years, for decades. Probably at the Boone County Fair. So today, a good day for the Arlington Park Million, the Arlington Million today, and that's where we'll be spending our afternoon, and I would hope a lot of you will do the same. But right now, we're going to talk about livestock markets, and we're going to talk about the bombshell crop report yesterday that sent soybeans down 42 cents a bushel in response to the numbers that surprised just about all of the traders in the soybean market particularly. So that's coming up here on the Saturday morning show, but right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says. And for decades we've been sponsored by the folks at Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. And this morning on Samuelson Says, another reminder that change is constant. This week on Samuelson Says, I want to take a moment to say thank you and share with you a special award I received last week in Scottsdale, Arizona, at the annual convention of the American Agricultural Editors Association. Truly honored to receive that award from the people in print media, the writers for farm magazines and farm newspapers, and providing a lot of farm information for readers across the country representing all kinds of agriculture. But the award takes on an even more special meaning because of the change. I talk a lot about change being constant, and in agriculture, technological change indeed is happening every day. But it's also happening in agricultural media. Because for me, as a farm broadcaster, to be presented an award from, well, what a lot of people consider my competition, is a special honor. The toughest job I would have is sitting in front of a blank computer screen and filling it with words that are thoughtful and meaningful and say something. That's just too big a challenge for me, and so I really am honored to get the award from writers who are able to do that quickly and easily. In my case, I do all my writing with my mouth. But when I started as a broadcaster in the late 1950s, competition with farm writers was intense. We didn't like each other for the most part. I know in Chicago I worked for the company that published the Chicago Tribune and WGN Radio, and my counterpart on the newspaper side just didn't like me when I came to town. I think by the time he retired, we were pretty good friends. But putting the competition aside, and I think we have pretty well done that. Well, except our salespeople in communications. But I think reporters who write or broadcast have pretty much put our differences aside. I was surrounded by a room full of friends in Scottsdale when I received the award last week. Thank you, editors. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. And we're a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks at 19 minutes before 6 o'clock on the start of a beautiful Saturday across most of the Midwest and people who put county and state fairs together pray for this kind of weather. They always say it can rain the final night of the fair, but we like the dry weather during the fair. And a big crowd yesterday at the Boone County Fair in Belvedere. Well, there was a blockbuster crop report out yesterday. We'll get to that a little bit later. But let's talk livestock this morning, too. And for that, we join Max and his guest.
In the studio with us this weekend, Dennis Smith, Archer Financial Services. Dennis, let's talk about this livestock situation and begin by talking about hogs. And we're in kind of a long, dark tunnel here, it seems.
Boy, we've seen some real weakness, in fact, historical-type weakness in the cash hog market. We're just now beginning to discover, it appears like through several slaughter disruptions, kind of starting around the 4th of July, there was a tornado in Iowa, there was some software upgrades by Smithfield, there was some other mechanical breakdowns. And when you're working with record large pork production, just a little bit of a backup in the slaughter pace, it seems like hogs were backed up, weights have come up, we've got to get these hogs killed, we've got to get things current, and that has created a real mess here in the short term.
And the producers, at least according to the June report, had not pulled in the reins on production.
No, in fact, unfortunately, the expansion is sort of accelerated. It appears like, Max, that producers making a decision to even expand production a little bit more, and approximately about 3 months before this tariff situation hit. So the timing was really bad as far as accelerating the expansion of the hog breeding herd.
We're still several weeks away from the September pig crop report. Will that show continued expansion, you think?
Well, we're not sure. Now that with this really hard down in the cash hog market, probably going to see signs of it tempering. I think a year from now we'll be talking about contraction.
But the losses are piling up. In other words, the cost of production has to be significantly higher than the price right now, is it not?
Yeah, break-evens vary by producer, but I don't think there's anyone that has a break-even low enough to make money at these prices. So we are sustaining industry-wide losses on hogs right now, yes.
And this is even with cheap grain?
Oh, I think so, most definitely.
Well, now, let's talk about the what's happening in terms of exports and what the tariffs have meant to the export demand and what role that has played. How have you sorted that out, Dennis?
Well, we are seeing a slowdown. I think that's pretty obvious, but I don't think it's quite as dramatic as expected. One reason I say that is pork is so cheap right now. China continues to import pork, U.S. pork. Now, their imports in June were down about 37% versus a year ago, but pork prices are so inexpensive right now, they can still pay the tariff, and they are importing pork at lower prices than what they were, say, a year ago. Mexico is doing the same thing with hams. Ham prices are incredibly cheap. What's happening is other countries are picking it up. They are eyeballing the tremendous value of U.S. pork, and we are seeing the increases in other countries trying to stabilize the export situation.
What countries are you talking about?
We're talking about like Colombia and Latin American countries, South Korea, even Japan. We're seeing some real growth in some of these markets.
Those are countries that many of us didn't think about as being pork exporters.
Yeah, that's right. Colombia, for example, is becoming a very big piece of U.S. pork export business.
Now, here's the question that I guess comes into my mind. As we look past eventually somewhere down the road past this trade war, will those countries still be firmly entrenched? I mean, I think about our soybean situation and the loss of market share that we are seeing, and will that come back to haunt us on down the road? What's your feeling about that pork market share that we've enjoyed and the others are now proud to pick up?
Yeah, it's hard to say for sure, but what I do know for sure is we offer extremely high-quality pork product and a disease-free environment, and I hope it stays that way. We've got some new situations developing. For example, in China, African swine fever has been detected for the first time. This is a problem in Russia, other Baltic states. So I think we have the highest quality pork product in the world, and I think that will continue to serve our purpose and serve our benefit.
African swine fever in China, that would hurt their hog herd and their ability to produce, one would think. Could that then provide opportunities for others to sell there?
Well, it definitely will. One thing China does not do is export pork. They consume all that they raise. So it's not like we're going to hurt an export competitor, but China is sitting on half of the world pig population. If that begins to spread in China, and let's hope it does not, then they've got a real problem. We do not want to see this spread in other countries in Asia either. This is the first time this has been detected in China, and they need to find out how it got there and then nip that in the bud.
Switching gears a little bit, let's talk about the beef situation. Where are we now? What's happening here in the summer of 2018?
Well, we've kind of got a trading market or a range type market. We've had a tremendous demand surge in U.S. beef, and I'm talking both domestic demand as well as export demand. Recent export data, June beef exports were up 15% from a year ago. These are unheard of type numbers. 6 month data, January through June, beef exports this year up 9% compared to the 6 months of last year. So we've working through the so-called wall of cattle in very good fashion. In the very short term, it looks like we're beginning to stabilize, and we're kind of at the higher end of the range of trade.
And the industry can handle that kind of a jump in exports. In other words, the processing capacity, the exporting capacity of the industry is there to meet that kind of increase in demand.
You bet. The industry is more than ready and capable to continue to provide this type of product. And it's really bottomed out our cash steer market this summer, much higher than expected, which has been a real pleasant surprise.
What's behind that kind of a gain, and is that kind of an increase sustainable over the months ahead through the rest of this year, Dennis?
Well, again, I think it is. We have, again, high-quality, disease-free product. If we can stabilize outside forces, meaning like the U.S. dollar, if we can keep beef out of the tariff fray, so to speak, and let's hope that remains the case, we can continue to sustain a very strong export potential.
So how are the producers themselves doing here?
Well, it's questionable. It all depends upon the price of feeder cattle, and did you get them bought right? Certainly feed is reasonable right now, and appears like it will be reasonable for the foreseeable future. But it's not a real gravy train. Some guys are making money, some guys are not. It's really kind of on the line there of how well did you purchase your replacement animals.
What's your price expectation then as you take a look at both beef and the pork side? First of all, for the cattle producers.
Well, I think you're going to see the cash steer market stabilize here in the late summer. We're already into Labor Day demand. I think you see cash prices pull back. But looking out in the next 6 months, I think you're going to see placements of cattle begin to taper off. We've had aggressive placements in the first half of the year. I think that's going to begin to slow down. And we begin to see a good, strong cash steer market develop in the winter, say into the fourth quarter and first quarter of next year.
That's not bad news. Why? What kind of prices you think about?
I think you can see the December futures and the December the cash market in the fourth quarter, 120 versus the 113, 114 area that we're looking at, maybe even higher. There's a possibility you can get fourth quarter, early first quarter, as high as 125 on that cash steer market.
Hate to end on a downer, but what do you see for hogs?
Hog market is going to be just an awful challenge here going into the fall season. We do have the packers gearing up. We've got second shifts coming into play. We've got a lot of product. The good news is product is incredibly cheap. And the other part is futures are already at a sharp discount. We have baked in an awful lot of bad news into the current futures market. So at this moment, from these prices, not real bearish, but you've got to look for some lower cash hog prices into the November Thanksgiving time frame.
Price range of what?
down into the to the cash hog prices into the 40s, upper 40s is certainly a possibility. It's not going to be a very good forecast.
We appreciate it always, the chance to visit with you, Dennis, and your insight about what's going on in livestock and meats. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services.
Well, we're about 5.5 minutes away from news time on WGN Radio, but let me share with you some of the trader comments that came out yesterday after the USDA came out with its August crop report that had surprisingly big numbers in both corn and soybeans. Jack Scoville, analyst at the Price Futures Group, said, "Beans are just absolutely a bearish number. I think production will be too high in the end, but the rest of it is probably fine." And no wonder soybean futures are down 35 cents a bushel in the trade yesterday. Mark Gold, managing partner of Top Third Ag Marketing, said, "The bean number is so unbelievably large. If we don't do a trade deal with the Chinese, the American farmer is going to be in dire straits." And looking at some of the numbers in that report yesterday, the yield per acre went up sharply in the report yesterday, particularly for corn and also for soybeans. And if we come through the year with a soybean crop holding where they said it would yesterday, we'll still be the world's largest producer of soybeans. We thought Brazil would take over that title this year, but not going to happen. And USDA boosted its outlook for soybean exports to 2,060,000,000 bushels. This after sharply cutting the export number in July. Corn harvest, the yield per acre came in at 178.4 bushels, and that was up 4.4 bushels in the yield per acre category. Soybean production for the crop year at 4,586,000,000 bushels. Average yields coming in at 51.6 bushels per acre, and both the yield and production outlooks topped the high end of the market forecast. So Don Roos, president of U.S. Commodities, said, from a U.S. standpoint, it's supply bearish. There's just not a lot of bullishness to talk about. So we'll see what happens on Monday when we open the market after yesterday's decline. The August soybean market down 42.5 cents a bushel. September corn down 12 cents a bushel. September wheat down 18 cents a bushel, despite concerns over weather in other parts of the world. And that's our time for this week on the Saturday Morning Show. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for putting it all together on the technical end. Thanks to all of the folks who checked in with us, and thank you for listening.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.